Well, hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, happy Hallowtide weekend. It's a good time to have the wood stove fire burning. It's just starting to snow right now, so cozy up. This week, I have a double feature for you. Our first Desert Oracle Radio episode is the new one by Ken Lane, released on October 28th, 2024. Like our memories of our beloveds that have passed, Ken is remembering some voices from Desert Oracle Radio's past. Well, here's the episode titled, Up from the Grave.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and you know it's getting close to Halloween. When the jack-o'-lanterns are already turning up, murdered in the dry wash. The dry wash where I sometimes start my evening walk. Three in a row, smashed to bits. And these jack-o'-lanterns had not really been cleaned up inside, sort of an amateur job. So when they break apart, all the stringy pumpkin guts spray out all around. Very disturbing. If you clean out your pumpkin or turnip, if you're a traditionalist, not only do you get a better flame inside and a better shape to the face that you've cut out, sharpness around the eyes and the teeth, very important. But you have a lot of delicious pumpkin seeds ready for the oven. Clean off the strands of pumpkin innards. Add some sea salt. And roast them until they're golden brown and the house smells like a pumpkin pie. A pumpkin pie left in the oven for too long. Halloween is here again, and it looks like the Vatican is taking this opportunity to release a new demon into the world. An ill-advised publicity stunt to appeal to the youth. According to the Catholic News Service, this little yellow anime demon is the Catholic mascot for the year 20 and 25, a Jubilee year. And they named it Luce. Latin for light, like Lucifer, the light bearer, the shining one. They're going to manufacture millions of these things, and certain unlucky children will get them for Christmas because the kids love anime, according to the Vatican. Imagine millions of these demon idols showing up all over the world at the same time. Identical anime demons. To be put upon a shelf and venerated. And here in the news release, there's a picture of the Archbishop with a little figurine of this demon, Luce, in its shining yellow robe and glowing eyes and the weapon of Pluto himself, the bident, the two-pronged pitchfork. The trident belongs to Poseidon. Halloween is really the only remaining scrap of the wild abandon of the old festival calendar. The festival nights had used to be the favorite part of people's lives, a seasonal festival celebrated by prince and priest and pauper, young and old. Dances and processions and drinking and eating and strange old customs, strange old rituals that bind you to the land, to the place where you live. The voices from the forest becoming ever more evident in the shadows of your mind. All Hallows' Eve is the night before All Souls' Day. Dia de los Muertos in Mexico and the border towns. And that has a whole interesting history of its own, including its apparent preservation of the otherwise lost dance macabre traditions that followed the shock of the Black Death in medieval Europe. If you are a Catholic or an Orthodox Christian or otherwise follow the Catholic calendar, maybe because you're a vampire and you have to sort of work around various holy days, the 72-hour triple holy day of All Hallows' Eve, All Souls' Day, and All Saints' Day is called Hallowtide, which is a fantastic name, completely underused. What shall we do for Hallowtide? Go to our village festival and the bonfires on the hilltops, or maybe go on horseback to our relations' town, a day's ride down the ridgeway, and celebrate there. On All Souls, we'll solemnly walk from Mass to the cemetery and have a little picnic there with our ancestors, pour out a little for Grandma Jenny. She always loved rum. All Saints' Day is just for the saints, I suppose. I don't know how strictly this stuff is enforced. But I do feel bad for the various saints who got thrown out of the official catalog or never made it at all.
Desert Oracle Radio.
I call McGregor Mathers from his grave. For in my first hard springtime, we were friends, although of late estranged. I thought him half a lunatic, half knave, and told him so, but friendship never ends. And what if mind seems changed, and it seemed changed with the mind? What thoughts rise up unbid on generous things that he did? And I grow half contented to be blind. He had much industry at setting out, much boisterous courage before loneliness had driven him crazed. For meditations upon unknown thought make human intercourse grow less and less. They are neither paid nor praised. But he'd object to the host. The glass became my glass, a ghost lover he was, and may have grown more arrogant being a ghost. That's from All Souls Night by William Butler Yeats. And this is Desert Oracle Radio with soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Now picture yourself on the highway, behind the wheel, the middle of nowhere, as we used to say, looking for a signal on this hollowtide night. And from years past, these strange voices rise up through the radio speakers. Welcome to Desert Oracle Radio. You're on the air.
Hey, Ken. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
So I wanted to call in about a mystery occurrence, I guess you could call it, that's happening in Old Town Yucca at the moment.
It's happening right now. Please,
it's currently
please tell
happening,
us.
Yeah, right in front of my place. In Old Town Yucca, right on Santa Fe Trail.
What's going on? Give us a rundown.
So this is a reoccurring disturbance, I guess you could say. It's been happening for the past, like, 5 days. Looking out from the front window of my place through the oleander bush is a, like, champagne-colored, maybe 2001 GMC full-body pickup truck.
Go on.
And it's been parked there for, like, 5 days.
Is there anyone in it?
No, there's nobody in it, and it has a mean oil leak.
Other than the oil leak, has there been anything specifically weird about it?
Well, yeah, that it's been parked in front of the house for like 5 days.
Well, listen, does it have a license plate?
It does.
All right, well, don't say it on the air, but I bet if we look into that license plate, we might figure out a little bit about what's going on. Do you have the sense that it has anything to do with you and your residence?
Absolutely not.
All right, well, keep an eye on it, and if you see anyone coming and going...
No, there's no coming and going.
No coming and going.
That's the serious part.
It's just sitting there. All right. I may just drive over and take a look after the show.
No problem.
There you have it, folks.
Native Americans locally in 29 Bombs, they claim that they were dropped off on top of Queens Mountain there. And that's where they came to the area by being dropped off in some ships, I guess, spaceships. But that's where they started, and they came down and they settled in that area, from the spaceships. And then if the Famagallians consider the San Jacinto Mountains as really sacred, San Jacinto Peak. In fact, they claim that there's a sacred place up on the mountain, and there's water, it's green, there's animals up there, but if you try to take the pictures or anything, they're going to come out. You know, and they claim that that's their sacred mountain, and that's where they originate. That's their origin story from that mountain also. So the desert area has a long history of encounters with the unknown.
Thank you.
hear an alien story. To me, it's the only thing I've ever saw myself back in 1994 at a fraternal organization. I was outside as a door watcher keeper. And over the mountains at 29 Palms, I saw this ball of light like you see on the news now. They're showing these round balls of light chasing each other. And it came from like over in Indio Palm Springs up against the mountains here in 29 Palms. One followed another and they started chasing each other. They go off in thousands of miles an hour all the way out west to Yucca Valley, and then they come back and they'd be chasing each other, and they'd stand in formation at times and they'd chase each other. It went on for about 8-10 minutes maybe, and I never could get an explanation for that. So it was my personal phenomenon. All right. I held it in.
Oh, that's wild. Yeah. When they disappeared, did they just blink out or fly away or?
They flew away out of sight. They just flew and they were in no time out of sight.
That sounds like a good, that reminds me of when Jimmy Carter was running for president. He's one of two presidents that had a UFO sighting he made public. He was standing outside a fraternal organization in a small town in Georgia with a couple of guys.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and this big kind of egg-shaped thing went by and hovered there. And they all stood there in shock and talking about it, and it was around for a couple of minutes and took off. And he said it shook him.
So there you go, Robbie. You shared an experience with an ex-president.
That's right.
Yeah, I did. My God, that's crazy. Yeah. These were, they were just like perfectly round balls of light.
Right.
And several people thought most of them are all gone by now. I thank you.
During the summer, I was at this lunch for the writers who are featured in Palm Springs Noir, the desert crime fiction collection that had just been published. And I heard something at that lunch that was so matter-of-fact, strange, and unsettling that it's been in the back of my mind ever since. And this seems like a good time of year to bring that weird experience to the people who need it most, Desert Oracle Radio listeners seeking dread on Halloween weekend. The person who told that story at the lunch was Todd Goldberg, the New York Times best-selling author of books including The Low Desert, Gangsterland, Gangster Nation, Living Dead Girl, etc. The man knows the Low Desert and its seedy history like the back of a dead mobster's hand. Found somewhere east of Indio under the hood of a Lincoln. So Todd also hosts Open Book on Coachella FM with the author Maggie Downs, and he also had a really good Frank Sinatra in Palm Springs story, but that's for another time. The dread is what we seek. So welcome, Todd Goldberg, to Desert Oracle Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a dream of mine to be coming through speakers next to you, spreading dread across the desert landscape.
This story came up very casually. I didn't even hear the first couple of words because I was talking to whoever was next to me, talking about the weather or something. Pretty hot down here, huh? And you started going into this tale. I want to hear the whole thing. So just start from the beginning, if you will.
So the important thing to know is that when I was a kid, my siblings and I were all very into the Ouija board. It was a big part of our life. You might be surprised to learn we did not have great parents. Like we played around with the Ouija board for years and years and years. And some weird stuff happened when I was a kid, when like my brother and sister were doing it. Stuff where like kids wouldn't come over to the house anymore, you know? And so from a very young age, I'd watch my siblings play with the Ouija board, and eventually I would get in there too. And I don't know if I believed it or not, but, you know, contextually, this is the 1970s, early 1980s. We watched a lot of In Search Of, you know, always in search of something. So I started at a very young age to play around with a Ouija board by myself. And
hey, hang on just a second. How do you do that?
Well, so theoretically, you're trying not to move it yourself by having any muscles in your body move. And I would ask questions out loud, and the mover would move around, or I would think a question because I was trying to outwit the spirit world to make sure that it didn't need to speak English. Because even as a kid, I was like, well, why does the spirit world only understand English? Shouldn't I be speaking in Hungarian or whatever? And so sometimes I would think this stuff, sometimes I would say it out loud, and the little mover would move. So I would play around with this a lot when I was, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. And then I sort of lost it for a while when I got interested in girls and things of that nature. But then I got a job, an after-school job, and I was working at an advertising agency in Palm Springs for a guy named Dell, who was a terrible human being. He's dead now, and I'm happy about that. So I worked for
Dell.
I worked for Dell and Betty, and Dell was a horrible guy. And I had to do all this filing, and I was in this basement of this advertising agency in Palm Springs, a crappy little advertising agency. And one day I just started making my own Ouija boards and doing it by myself. And like to while away the hours, I would play around by myself on a Ouija board. I was 17 years old at this point. This was 1988.
So by making a Ouija board, did you make it out of wood and paint or printer? Or?
I took the cardboard off of a filing box, you know, like a banker's box, and I cut the sides off of it, and I just drew it with a marker on that. And then I made the little pointer also out of just a folded piece of cardboard. I cut it into a triangle. And I would, you know, I'd ask questions like, does Marcy like me? You know, is Jan Schoenberger into me? You know, questions like that. I would be simple and stupid. And then I'd get more complex, and it would move around and answer questions and stuff. And I didn't know if it was real, and I didn't really care at that point. I was just trying to spend some time. So there was one day, this was the summer, I remember it clearly, and I was bored out of my mind, and so I took the Ouija board out and I started playing with it. I said, are there any spirits here? And the pointer began to move, and it kept spelling out the same thing over and over and over again. It kept spelling out, you must call my wife. You must call my wife. You must call my wife. And it was freaking me out. Because I was like, okay, if I'm doing this myself, why would I be saying this? Like, why would I be pointing to this? And so then I started asking questions. I said, what's your name? And I said, my name is David. And I said, you must call my wife. You must call my wife. And so finally I said, okay, well, what's your phone number? And he spells out a phone number. And I'm like, oh God, this is creeping me out. Because a weird thing had happened to me years ago when I was about 12. I had been playing around with this, with the Ouija board at home by myself. And I kept saying, like, if you're a real spirit, what was your old phone number? And then right when it was about to spell out the phone number, because it was like 2, 4, 5, and then it stopped and it said, ring. And right when it said ring, my phone rang. And that scared me. That was it. I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not doing this anymore. This is freaking me up. And just saying that just now made the hair on my arms go up. I can remember it so clearly. I was sitting in my kitchen, and the dog was there, and the phone rang, and I was like, I'm out. I'm done. So it spells out this phone number for me. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh, God, I don't know what to do about this. But I said, all right, I'm gonna give it a shot. And so I pick up the phone and I call the number, and it was a Los Angeles number. And a woman answers the phone, and I said, I don't want to freak you out or anything. This is probably very strange, but I've been playing with a Ouija board and it kept saying, you must call my wife, you must call my wife. And so a man named David said this, and so I'm calling. And the woman on the other line of the phone said, why are you doing this to me? Why do you keep doing this to me? People keep calling me all day long saying they have messages from David. Why are you doing this to me? And I was like, ma'am, I'm sorry. The Ouija board told me to do this. I'm just doing what the Ouija board said. And she said, my husband has been dead for a year and this is cruel. Stop doing this to me. And she hung up the phone. And I just sat there and I was like, I can't play with this anymore. I'm not going to touch one of these things ever again for the rest of my life.
From Amboy to Zizek's, broadcasting across the Great Mojave Wilderness. This is Desert Oracle Radio with soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Speaking of Red, Blue, Black, Silver, I saw a picture of his Halloween costume. It's pretty outrageous. He is going as Natalie Portman and the movie Black Swan. Very concerning, really. Thanks to our supporters who keep this show alive at patreon.com/Desert Oracle, or you can go to our website, desertoracle.com. Hundreds of episodes of this radio program produced for you in Joshua Tree, California. I got to go to a terrific community haunted house sort of deal in the Hudson Valley, and it's open through Halloween, I think through the weekend after too. It's called the Haunted Fortress of Stanford. It's in the town of Stanford near Rhinebeck. And it was fantastic. I had no idea what to expect. And it was great, and it wasn't completely disgusting with a lot of blood spraying out of amputated heads and whatever. It was still pretty creepy, though. Look it up on your surveillance device. I did just now, and it says cash only, so don't try to sneak in with your Venmo or the chip in your head or whatever. They don't take that. I hope your Halloween week is moody and spooky and memorable. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM. Your next half hour is an episode of Desert Oracle Radio from October 29th, 2021. And if you're looking for tales of dread, you'll like this one. And remember, the events Ken mentions at the end happened a long time ago. So welcome to the Witching Hour.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
night has fallen on the desert. It's just weird out there. Mudslides and flooding and windstorms and little earthquakes. A dozen fires were still burning here and there in the Sierra Nevada. Until, boom, 14 or 16 inches of rain in 24 hours. The pass is suddenly closed due to heavy snow. Nobody knows what will happen next, and then it's hot again, murder weather. Like you could get away with anything right about now. People are too distracted, too run down, too baffled, or maybe just enjoying the weather. It's a beautiful thing to watch rain fall down after such a dry, dry time. To watch the wild storm scrub it all clean. Whatever you think of Los Angeles, after a good winter storm, it looks like a dream. Sparkling in the clean blue sky, that wall of transverse ranges suddenly right on top of you. Snow-topped and majestic. What is this, Switzerland all of a sudden? Or better yet, the Eastern Sierra? That's what it's like in the Southwest for the magic day or so right after a winter storm comes through. The air is crisp and clean with the light fragrance of the native sage and chaparral. Blown down from the mountains over the LA Basin and finally funneled through Gorgonio Pass and into the desert. Blast of fresh air, damp and chilly like we haven't known in a while, like anything's possible. Get in the car with somebody, why not? What else are you gonna do with your time? Just a little errand. Nobody has to know. And then maybe you're in a situation where there's a crime ring. It started naturally, really. A weakness became apparent, and some people who had little to lose decided to take advantage of the moment. Where desperation meets opportunity, that's where you'll find the action. And who benefits from putting your own self on the line, right? If somebody's rolling a flat screen out of Walmart while these other characters are rolling another dozen very loaded carts out of the parking lot, and maybe there's some confusion about the receipts, and maybe a baby's crying, and isn't everybody just so run down, etc.? Who says I gotta play Batman? I was just along for the ride. Get out of the house for a while and get some of that fresh, crisp air. Everybody knows what it's like to be afraid. But most of us know it's a little worse to be scared. Afraid can be like, I'm afraid I'm really not interested in reading your 1,000-word text message. Or it can be something along the lines of being afraid of doing something you know is going to be difficult or unpleasant. like going to the dentist or climbing up on the roof if you're not good with heights. But you've got to do it because your dumb cat's up there. Or your kid threw her favorite stuffed animal up there because she's possessed by a terrible spirit. Yet every suspicion escaped your attention. The momentary fright is a scare. You can scare somebody by jumping out from behind a door wearing a terrible mask, or you can have a medical scare. Doctor says I should lay off these unfiltereds since my heart attack scare. And then there's petrified. Now that's a funny way to describe a particular kind of fear, a current dread. You are not frantic and you aren't screaming. Instead, you are fixed in place as if a statue, petrified. Like the fossilized trees of the late Triassic, some 225 million years ago, preserved today at Petrified Forest National Park outside of Holbrook, Arizona. Ancient pine trees, ancient giants. You know, there's a small pueblo reconstructed, but more or less historically accurate, at Petrified Forest. They built their houses out of petrified trees. And then, for reasons somewhat mysterious, but probably related to climate, the people just packed up and left, or they were all killed by monsters. There are monsters, now and then. Sometimes they settle inside a human body. Other times they whip up the necessary energy to have physical agency. For a little while, long enough. Petrified is a hell of a condition to find yourself in. Especially when you are young, when you are just a little kid. When my grandma, my Ma D, as we called her, moved into my family house in New Orleans after Grandpa died following that whole wild week of death swirls on the ceiling of their double shotgun down on North Rampart Street, well, I got moved to the back room. A patio room added to the back of the house by the previous owners. It jutted into the backyard. And at night, that yard faded under cover of a big old oak tree. I went from having a regular little kid's bedroom to being in that big square patio room cut off from the rest of the house. Nobody would have even heard me scream. Which I was unable to do anyway. I never made a sound when it happened because I was frozen. How did my lungs and heart even function in such rigid terror? You see, I'd be trying to go to sleep so I could go to school the next day and be yelled at by the teachers for whatever they didn't like that day. Teachers had just about stopped routinely beating the kids at that point, and it just made them meaner. So I'd have the radio playing, the AM radio. New Orleans had wonderful DJs in those days, and they'd talk to you. Tell you little stories, talk about the weather or whatever, tell you where they stopped for dinner before the overnight shift. And they'd play the beautiful hit songs of the day, Roberta Flack and Bill Withers and Al Green, I'll Take You There and Tumbling Dice, Sammy Davis Jr. singing The Candyman, Little Michael Jackson singing about a magical pet rat, the OJs and the Shylights. But the radio was always quiet when I'd find myself once again looking into the darkness beyond the foot of the bed. That narrow twin bed sticking into the dark. First and always came the eyes. Red, fiery, like lava. Like the lava rocks got in the gas barbecue grill outside. As the eyes approached, slow and steady, the outlines of a face could be assumed or imagined. Who knows what else was really there? Beyond those menacing, unblinking eyes. Only once it had reached the bed and rose over the end of it like a balloon clearing an obstacle was its head more or less apparent. It would be inaccurate to say I tried to scream because there was no trying, really. The thought would be there, the only real thought, but no muscle action followed. The head was that of a devil once it was close enough to make out. An enormous head, twice the size of any I'd seen atop an adult's body. Greasy dark red, reflecting whatever dim ambient light survived that darkness. Once I remember snapping out of the trance enough to sit upright and scooch back against the headboard, flat back, the one movement I could manage. But it just kept a coming. Until, inches away, blacked out. Nightmares, that was the excuse. I tried once or twice to tell somebody in the morning, and if noticed at all, my report was dismissed as nightmares. Eventually, I came to believe it myself, even though there was no doubt of my being awake in my mind. I knew what dreams were. I knew what nightmares were. In dreams, I could fly. I had wild, surreal adventures. In nightmares, I was chased. Here in this miserable patio room that surely wasn't up to any kind of building code, too hot in the summer and too cold in the winter, I was just stuck. During the summer, I was at this lunch for the writers who are featured in Palm Springs Noir, the desert crime fiction collection that had just been published. And I heard something at that lunch that was so matter-of-fact, strange, and unsettling that it's been in the back of my mind ever since. And this seems like a good time of year to bring that weird experience to the people who need it most. Desert Oracle Radio listeners seeking dread on Halloween weekend. The person who told that story at the lunch was Todd Goldberg, the New York Times best-selling author of books including The Low Desert, Gangsterland, Gangster Nation, Living Dead Girl, etc. The man knows the Low Desert and its seedy history like the back of a dead mobster's hand. Found somewhere east of Indio under the hood of a Lincoln. So Todd also hosts Open Book on Coachella FM with the author Maggie Downs, and he also had a really good Frank Sinatra and Palm Springs story, but that's for another time. The dread is what we seek. So welcome, Todd Goldberg, to Desert Oracle Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a dream of mine to be coming through speakers next to you, spreading dread across the desert landscape.
This story came up very casually. I didn't even hear the first couple of words because I was talking to whoever was next to me, talking about the weather or something. Pretty hot down here, huh? And you started going into this tale. I want to hear the whole thing. So just start from the beginning, if you will.
So the important thing to know is that when I was a kid, my siblings and I were all very into the Ouija board. It was a big part of our life. You might be surprised to learn we did not have great parents. Like we played around with the Ouija board for years and years and years. And some weird stuff happened when I was a kid, when like my brother and sister were doing it. Stuff where like kids wouldn't come over to the house anymore, you know? And so from a very young age, I'd watch my siblings play with the Ouija board. And eventually I would get in there too. And I don't know if I believed it or not, but you know, contextually, this is the 1970s, early 1980s. We watched a lot of In Search Of, you know, always in search of something. So I started at a very young age to play around with a Ouija board by myself. And
hey, hang on just a second. How do you do that?
Well, so theoretically, you're trying not to move it yourself by having any muscles in your body move. And I would ask questions out loud and the mover would move around, or I would think a question because I was trying to outwit the spirit world to make sure that it didn't need to speak English. Because even as a kid, I was like, well, why does the spirit world only understand English? Shouldn't I be speaking in Hungarian or whatever? And so sometimes I would think the stuff, sometimes I would say it out loud and the little mover would move. So I would play around with this a lot when I was, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. And then I sort of lost it for a while when I got interested in girls and things of that nature. But then I got a job, an after-school job, and I was working at an advertising agency in Palm Springs for a guy named Dell, who was a terrible human being. He's dead now, and I'm happy about that. So I worked for
Dell.
I worked for Dell and Betty, and Dell was a horrible guy. And I had to do all this filing, and I was in this basement of this advertising agency in Palm Springs, a crappy little advertising agency. And one day I just started making my own Ouija boards and doing it by myself. And like to while away the hours, I would play around by myself on a Ouija board. I was 17 years old at this point. This was 1988.
So by making a Ouija board, did you make it out of wood and paint or
no.
Printer?
I took a big piece of, I took the cardboard off of a filing box, you know, like a banker's box, and I cut the sides off of it and I just drew it with a marker on that. And then I made the little pointer Also, out of just a folded piece of cardboard, I cut it into a triangle. And I would, you know, I'd ask questions like, does Marcy like me? You know, is Jan Schoenberger into me? You know, questions like that. I would be simple and stupid. And then I'd get more complex and it would move around and answer questions and stuff. And I didn't know if it was real and I didn't really care at that point. I was just trying to spend some time. So there was one day, this was the summer, I remember it clearly, and I was bored out of my mind. And so I took the Ouija board out and I started playing with it. I said, are there any spirits here? And the pointer began to move and it kept spelling out the same thing over and over and over again. It kept spelling out, you must call my wife. You must call my wife. You must call my wife. And it was freaking me out. Because I was like, okay, if I'm doing this myself, why would I be saying this? Like, why would I be pointing to this? And so then I started asking questions. I said, what's your name? And it said, my name is David. And it said, you must call my wife. You must call my wife. And so finally I said, okay, well, what's your phone number? And he spells out a phone number. And I'm like, oh God, this is creeping me out. Because a weird thing had happened to me years ago when I was about 12. I had been playing around with this, with the Ouija board at home by myself. And I kept saying, like, if you're a real spirit, what was your old phone number? And then right when it was about to spell out the phone number, because it was like 2, 4, 5, and then it stopped and it said, ring. And right when it said ring, my phone rang. And that scared me. Like, that was it. I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. This is freaking me out. And just saying that just now made the hair on my arms go up. I can remember it so clearly. I was sitting in my kitchen, and the dog was there, and the phone rang, and I was like, I'm out. I'm done. So it spells out this phone number for me. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh, God, I don't know what to do about this. But I said, all right, I'm going to give it a shot. So I pick up the phone and I call the number, and it was a Los Angeles number. And a woman answers the phone. And I said, I don't want to freak you out or anything. This is probably very strange, but I've been playing with a Ouija board and it kept saying, you must call my wife. You must call my wife. And so a man named David said this. And so I'm calling. And the woman on the other line of the phone said, why are you doing this to me? Why do you keep doing this to me? People keep calling me all day long saying they have messages from David. Why are you doing this to me? And I was like, ma'am, I'm sorry. The Ouija board told me to do this. I'm just doing what the Ouija board said. And she said, my husband has been dead for a year and this is cruel. Stop doing this to me. And she hung up the phone. And I just sat there and I was like, I can't play with this anymore. I'm not going to touch one of these things ever again for the rest of my life.
Look at that, it's Halloween again. Remember when they said on the news or whatever how Halloween was finished because this was no time for a holiday that remembers the dead? The time when we pay tribute to our departed and remember the wheel of the year and the return of the spirits. Desert Oracle Radio is hitting the road and tickets are on sale now, November 26th at Bridges in San Diego, the 27th in Tucson, Club Congress, December 2, Stateside Theater in Austin. On the 4th at the Texas Theater in Dallas. Sunday the 5th at Paper Tiger in San Antonio. December 7th at the Galveston Artist Residency, a free performance. Wednesday, December 8th at Gasa Gasa in my hometown of New Orleans. December 11th at Growlers in Memphis. Sunday the 12th at Opolis in Norman, Oklahoma. Tuesday the 14th at the Jean Cocteau Cinema in Santa Fe. The 15th in Mesa, Arizona at the Nesbitt Elliott Playhouse. Friday, December 17th at the Philosophical Research Society in Los Angeles. Click events at DesertOracle.com. From Amboy to Zizix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio broadcasting from Joshua Tree. You know, I've got a Ouija board on the bookshelves here, and every now and then I glance at it and think, well, why not? But I think I'll just put that out of my mind. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver for new soundscapes tonight. Thank you for listening. And good night from the voice of the desert.
Is it just me experiencing deja vu? Well, thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to KGVM for supporting this program, and thanks to you for listening. I want to hear from you, so call and leave me a message or text about anything on your mind, especially something you're grateful for. The number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, stay well and sweet dreams.